Hello and welcome to our program, All About Pets, brought to you by Owl Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I'm Tammy Frazee, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from dailypaws.com here on Owl Radio. So the first article I have is, Find an Orphaned Baby Animal in the Wild. Here's What to Do. Wild baby critters are beyond adorable and might seem helpless, but experts provide tips for assessing the situation and handling it properly by Tracy L. Kelly. Spotting a baby animal in the wild immediately sparks a sense of wonder at their innocence and, let's face it, all the other heart-led feels. So when we stumble upon a sweet creature that seems to be without a family, naturally we want to rush in and help. An abandoned baby animal, in fact, might not be alone at all. Lynn Cunney is the founder and president of Wildlife Rescue and Rehabilitation in San Antonio, Texas. If you found a wild animal nestled in the brush during your morning jog, it's likely that the baby's mama is nearby. In the vast majority of cases, if a human comes near a nest of babies, the mother will flee, she says. For example, anyone seeing a fawn sleeping under a tree, in a backyard, or anywhere may wrongly assume that she has been abandoned. What has happened is that the mother deer has fled when the people approached. Cunny recommends that if you spot a baby wild animal, it's best to leave them alone, assured they're being cared for by their parents. It's essential to help our pets understand this message as well. Some dogs are bred as hunting companions, and cats have a natural predatory instinct. But in many circumstances, you can teach a dog through positive reinforcement training not to be so reactionary to other creatures around him. And the Wildlife Federation recommends methods to help reduce cat and wildlife interactions. A baby bird, squirrel, or rabbit will often die once she has been bitten by a dog or cat, Cunny says. Keep dogs on a leash if they are in an area where wildlife live, and keep cats indoors if they cannot find and harm helpless birds, lizards, squirrels, and other wildlife. Now, when to help a baby animal? Are there times when humans should help baby wildlife? Yes, to a point. Let's say you found a baby bird that fell out of its nest, or a baby squirrel that seems too young to scamper about. Cunny suggests making it easier for wild parents to find their lost critters by containing them. If you happen to see a baby bird or squirrel out of her nest due to a storm or the cutting down of a tree, it is best to create a makeshift nest, she says. Use a small box with some soft bedding that you can secure up in a nearby tree and place the baby in the box to see if her parents will return to care for her. Often a quick call to your state's Fish and Wildlife Organization or County Animal Assistance Office will provide you with the proper steps to assist a particular creature. Then you can simply keep an eye out for the grand reunion. We've all heard that you shouldn't handle baby wildlife with your bare hands, otherwise they'll be rejected by their mothers. Cunny says this simply isn't true. Wild parents will not abandon their babies because they have been touched by a human. This is an old, false tale and needs to be dispelled. Elizabeth Manning of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game offered more details in her article on the department's website. This is essentially a myth, but one that no doubt started to prevent people from disturbing wildlife, she writes. Most bird species, for example, can't smell well, and the majority of mammals accept the return of their babies without issue. Baby animals that have been handled by biologists are usually reunited with their mothers, who do not appear bothered by the biologist's scent on their young, Manning says. Again, disturbance is the real problem. If you found a baby bunny, a wild bird, or another wee creature who might need help, create a temporary shelter or nest with gentle, minimal movements so as not to frighten the creature any more than she probably is. Wearing gloves is often a good idea to avoid bites and scratches and to prevent the spread of potential diseases. But if you don't have time to grab a pair, just make sure to wash your hands thoroughly before and after handling an animal. What to do with an injured wild baby animal? If you see any wild animal you might think is injured, call a local licensed rehabilitator and have them provide assistance to the animal, she says. You can also contact your state wildlife agency for information on how to locate a rehabilitator. When might a baby animal need professional help? The Humane Society of the United States points to the following signs. If your pet brings a wild animal to you, the creature is shivering, bleeding, or has a broken limb, a bird is on the ground, featherless or nearly featherless, the baby animal is crying and wandering around most of the day, or you spot a dead parent nearby. Review the Humane Society's checklist for best practices if you've found a baby wild animal or bird, which includes specific tips for baby deer, foxes, possums, rabbits, skunks, and squirrels. You'll also learn how to handle the creatures and, if necessary, suggestions for calm transport. That's a great article. I love that. Great information. Okay, the next one is, could your cat have rabies? Rabies in cats can be fatal, and vaccinating cats against rabies is the law. Learn signs of infection and whether rabies can spread through a cat scratch. This is by Brendan Howard. And it was medically reviewed by Joanna Pendergrass, who's a veterinarian. So whether you continually wonder if your cat has plans to rule the world, whether she regularly stalks the toy you dangle, or whether she studiously ignores the activities around her, you know your cat's moods and behaviors. Rabies in cats can change those familiar attributes in a flash. Rabies is a viral disease that affects the brain and spinal cord of mammals, sometimes leading to the frightening mad dog aggression depicted in books and films. It's also a zoonotic disease, which means wildlife, as well as pet cats and dogs, can transmit it to human beings. Rabid mad dogs are mostly history in the United States, thanks to required vaccination and fewer stray dogs. Today, rabies in cats is rare, but cats have overtaken dogs as the most common domestic species to be infected. More than 90% of reports of rabies in animals to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are wildlife: bats, raccoons, skunks, foxes, etc. Pets who come in contact with wildlife or stray animals are still at risk. Vaccination is crucial and also helps protect people from uncomfortable rabies treatments after exposure, says Robin Downing. She's a veterinarian of the Downing Center for Animal Pain Management in Windsor, Colorado. The consequences of rabies exposure are unpleasant. For example, a kitten in a city park not far from Windsor bit a woman who was trying to rescue it. That kitten, its siblings, and its mother were captured, euthanized, and tested positive for rabies, Downing says. It required post-exposure rabies treatment for the woman and anyone else who came into contact with the kitten. If you worry your cat or kitten might have rabies or could catch this fatal disease, get to know the signs of infection, the vaccines that protect cats, and exactly how human beings can get rabies from an infected cat. How cats get rabies. Rabies is usually transmitted from the bite of an infected animal. It may also be transmitted through saliva, say you get some in your mouth, or an open wound. You're unlikely to get rabies from a cat scratch, but it is possible because cats lick their paws. Because wildlife are the most common carriers of rabies, house cats who spend some or all of their time outside are at greatest risk. But indoor-only cats aren't totally safe. Bats, raccoons, and other wild animals get into the homes, and indoor cats can escape outside. It's crucial and required by law in most places for your favorite felines to be properly vaccinated. Unowned or feral cats can also serve as a reservoir host for the rabies virus. Feral cat advocates and veterinarians debate how much owned cats are an issue in rabies infections. It is rare for a cat to be infected with rabies, but the result for unvaccinated cats is dire. That's why vaccinations and booster vaccinations are required by law. Signs of rabies in a cat. Rabies doesn't show up instantly. Rabies in cats has a lengthy incubation period of anywhere from weeks to a year. A cat infected with rabies may have just days to live once the signs start to show up. So it's essential you keep an eye out for the following common symptoms in an unvaccinated cat. So sudden behavioral changes. Is your kitty acting different? Pay attention to sudden behavior changes such as loss of appetite, signs of fear or nervousness, more frequent vocalizing, irritability, or excitability. Changes in social ability. A previously friendly cat may seek solitude, or a previously aloof cat may become surprisingly affectionate. Mad dog aggression. The aggression of an infected dog, shown in books and movies for years, can show up in cats with rabies as well. Rabid cats can become vicious, scratching or biting for no reason. They can lose a previous fear of people. No telltale signs of rabies is visible in a cat's eyes, although pupils may become dilated if the cat is agitated. Paralysis. In later stages of the disease, a cat may have seizures and lose control of muscles and the ability to swallow. Eventually, the cat's throat, jaws, and limbs may become paralyzed, after which death can occur. Diagnosis and treatment of rabies in cats. Ultimately, safety should come before diagnosis. Rabies is dangerous to people and fatal to pets. If you suspect your cat has been bitten by a wild animal, put on gloves before handling your cat and immediately call your vet. Even if you know the whereabouts of the wild animal that bit your cat, you should try not to handle or capture that animal, especially if it is behaving strangely, aggressiveness, seizures, or a nocturnal animal out in the daytime. Call animal control as soon as possible and let them handle it by providing as much information as possible. Diagnosis of rabies in cats is difficult. Sadly, the only way to test for rabies is analysis of brain tissue from a deceased animal. A veterinarian may be able to use tissue from the potentially infected animal that fought or bit your cat. If your cat shows signs of rabies and the other animal has been caught, the veterinarian or local authorities will probably require euthanasia of the wild animal and have its brain tissue examined by a qualified laboratory. If the test is positive and your cat is not vaccinated for rabies, it will be strongly recommended that your cat be euthanized as well. There are no treatments to cure an unvaccinated cat with rabies. If you refuse to have your cat euthanized, the cat may be placed in strict isolation without human or animal contact for at least 4 months. He will be vaccinated for rabies prior to release as long as signs of rabies do not appear during the quarantine. If the test on the infected animal is positive and your cat has been vaccinated, your cat will need a booster vaccine and you'll need to closely observe him or her for 45 days. Remember, no treatment will cure rabies in cats. Once the signs appear, the disease will be fatal. Humans bitten by an animal suspected or confirmed to have rabies receive wound care, rabies antibody injections at the bite wound, and doses of vaccines over a period of weeks. Proper post-exposure care almost guarantees survival in human beings. Cats aren't as lucky. So how to prevent rabies? Because there's no cure for rabies in cats, vaccination is the most important thing that you can do to protect your kitty. Indoor, outdoor, young or old, every cat needs to be vaccinated for rabies. Kittens can be vaccinated as early as 12 weeks of age. Because of differences among the brands of feline rabies vaccine on the market, your vet may recommend one or a variety. So choosing a rabies vaccine for your cat. The best way to keep your cat safe from rabies is to keep her vaccines up to date. With different vaccines administered on different schedules, be sure to find the vaccine option that's best for you and your cat's lifestyle and needs. Keep these considerations in mind when choosing a rabies vaccine for your cat. So, vaccine timing. Some vaccine Rabies vaccines are administered once a year. Others are administered with a booster after 1 year, but then further vaccines every 3 years. Your local laws, manufacturer recommendations, and your veterinarian's guidance all determine which vaccine will be right for your cat. Downing advocates for the 3 year vaccines, even though the initial cost may be more than a 1 year vaccine. Duration of rabies vaccines. If we use the 1 year vaccine, there's an annual charge, Downing says. If we use the 3 year vaccine, the actual cost per year is the same. The cat owner simply makes that investment in their cat once every 3 years. Possible side effects and efficacy. Some older vaccines contain adjuvants, which can help boost your cat's immune response to the vaccine. Newer vaccines leave out the adjuvants because a small, very small number of cats have experienced swelling or growths, feline injection sites, or coma at the site where they've received the older vaccines. Indoor cats may have lower risk of rabies. Cat owners and veterinarians may not all agree on whether domestic cats should be kept strictly indoors, but there is no question that keeping your cat indoors can help protect her from the wild or stray animals outside carrying rabies. It is safer for your cats to live indoors than to spend time outdoors, Downing says. Cars, parasites, and wild predators can hurt and kill pet cats. While they may be better off inside, Downing says cat owners need to create enriching indoor environments for their cats. There are many ways to help cats get stimulation and fresh air without being exposed to wild animals and the rabies that can carry, like catios, enclosed outdoor spaces, and even cat harnesses for walks together. No matter how you and your cat decide to explore the world or the couch, be sure to talk to your vet about keeping your cat up to date on his or her rabies vaccinations. They'll be able to provide expert advice on keeping him or her safe, and they may even have some fun ideas for indoor activities that'll keep them happy and healthy without risking rabies in the great outdoors. Okay, that was a good one too. The next one is heartworm in dogs. Okay, so this one's important too. Heartworms in dogs, your guide to causes, symptoms, prevention, and treatment. Heartworm disease is a serious condition that can affect dogs and is spread through mosquitoes. It can be deadly, so treatment and prevention is critical for keeping your pet healthy. And this is by Sarah Mouton Dowdy, and it was medically reviewed by Michelle Moyel, and she's a veterinarian. So according to estimates by the American Heartworm Society, more than 1 million dogs in the United States are infected with heartworms. These nasty parasites can cause serious permanent problems in pets, including death. And while treatment is typically effective, it comes with a high price tag, some risks, and a lot of hassle. Year-round prevention combined with an annual heartworm testing is by far the best option for the health of your dog and your wallet. So what are heartworms? Heartworms, also called, Deerofilaria immitis, they're parasites that infect the heart and lungs of affected animals, causing a condition called heartworm disease. The worms look similar to cooked spaghetti and can grow to be around 12 inches long. Dogs, as well as foxes, coyotes, and wolves, are natural hosts of heartworms, meaning the parasites can mature, mate, and reproduce while living inside them. However, other animals, including cats, ferrets, sea lions, and yes, even humans, can be infected with heartworms. Great. So how do dogs get heartworms? Mosquitoes play a key role in transmitting heartworms. Jackie Plapas, veterinarian, a clinical instructor at the University of Missouri College of Veterinary Medicine, describes the process as follows. So dogs, foxes, wolves, and coyotes infected with heartworms have baby worms in their bloodstream. When a mosquito bites and feeds on these infected animals, it picks up the baby worms in the blood. Once inside the mosquito, these baby worms develop into infectious worms. When the infected mosquito bites a dog, it leaves infectious worms on the dog's skin. The worms then crawl into the bite wound left by the mosquito, enter the dog's bloodstream, and eventually end up in its heart or the blood vessels leading from the heart into the lungs. The American Heartworm Society notes that adult heartworms can live up to 7 years in a dog, meaning each mosquito season can increase the number of worms in an infected pet. Wow. If left untreated, dogs can end up having hundreds of heartworms. Are some dogs more at risk for heartworm infection? Heartworm disease has been diagnosed in every state and is constantly spreading to new regions. The Companion Animal Parasite Council has parasite prevalence maps that can show you the number of positive canine heartworm tests in your area. It also has a 30-day parasite forecast map that rates infection risks from low to high by state and by county. But even if you don't live in a high-risk area, any dog that comes into contact with mosquitoes is at risk. And because mosquitoes can enter homes or bite dogs on bathroom breaks, even dogs who spend most of their time inside can get the parasite. So what are the symptoms of heartworm in dogs? So according to Plapis, most dogs diagnosed with heartworms don't show any signs, especially if they are inactive. Annual heartworm screenings during a pet's annual exam tend to catch the parasites before they're able to cause noticeable problems. The longer a pet is infected and the more worms they have, the more likely they are to have clinical signs. Kalepa says the most common signs include not wanting to exercise, coughing, and vomiting. She also says more serious symptoms of heartworm in dogs occur in dogs with a lot of worms, include weight loss, severe coughing or coughing up blood or blood-tinged material, difficulty breathing, pale or gray-blue gums, dark or bloody urine, collapse, and death. So how is heartworm disease diagnosed in dogs? Because the effects of heartworm disease get worse with time, it's important to have your dog screened for heartworms at least once a year. Kalepas explains that this screening typically occurs during your dog's annual wellness exam and involves two different tests, an antigen test and a microfilariae test. Neither test is 100% accurate, but using them in combination can yield better results. The antigen test detects a type of protein mainly found in female adult heartworms. Infection may go undetected if there are few worms, if only male worms are present, or if the infection is recent. The microfilariae test detects the presence of microfilariae, so baby heartworms, in the dog's bloodstream. Not all heartworm-infected dogs have this microfilariae. Annual testing is necessary for all dogs, even those on year-round heartworm prevention medication, because no heartworm preventative is 100% effective, and the mosquitoes can still infect your dog if you forget to give him his monthly dose of preventative or give it late, your dog spits out the meds when you're not looking, or he rubs off a topical preventative. So how are heartworms treated in dogs? If your dog tests positive for heartworm, your veterinarian will first closely evaluate your dog to make sure he's healthy enough to undergo treatment. This will include blood tests, chest x-rays. Some dogs with serious infections need months of supportive therapies before they're stable enough to be treated for heartworms. Your veterinarian will also ask you to restrict your dog's exercise, as physical exertion can speed up the heart and lung damage in infected dogs. Once your dog is determined to be healthy enough for heartworm treatment, the exact course will depend on the severity of the disease. Medication typically involves multiple injections of melarsomine, the only approved drug that kills adult heartworms. Additional medications may also be needed to kill the microfilariae, reduce inflammation, control pain, or protect against bacterial infections. At the end of the treatment, your dog will be placed on a monthly heartworm preventative medication. Melarsomine contains arsenic, and while that's effective at killing heartworms, it can also come with some serious side effects, including, but not limited to, swelling or pain at the injection site, coughing or gagging, lethargy, depression, fever, loss of appetite, vomiting, lung congestion, pulmonary thromboembolism, which is a blood clot in the lungs. It's very important for dogs to remain at rest before, during, and after the melarsomine treatment to reduce the risk of blood clots forming in the lungs. Your vet will discuss exercise restriction and other care guidelines, so be sure to follow them for your dog's safety. Surgery. So dogs with Caval syndrome, in which the heartworms physically block the blood vessels of the heart, will need to have the worms surgically removed before they can start the normal treatment regime. Sadly, dogs who have Caval syndrome rarely survive. Successive treatment. Klaipa says that while most dogs test negative for adult heartworms after treatment, success can be costly in terms of time, money, and inconvenience. Example, trying to keep your high-energy dog as calm as possible. It isn't easy on the patient either. Moreover, dogs can carry the consequences of infection for the rest of their lives. Dogs with no signs or mild signs of disease at the time of treatment will often only appear to fully recover. But there are often microscopic signs of permanent damage done to the dog's blood vessels years after successful treatment. A dog can be heartworm infection negative but forever have heartworm-associated disease. So how can heartworms be prevented? The good news, preventing heartworm disease is far easier and less expensive than treating it. There are several year-round preventative options available, and your veterinarian will work with you to find the best one for your pet. As an added bonus, many of these medications prevent other nasty parasites like fleas, hookworms, whipworms, and roundworms. So whether your dog is a puppy or an adult, you will need to talk with your veterinarian before starting your dog on a heartworm prevention. Dogs over 7 months of age need to be tested for heartworms first, as preventative medications can cause harm if the dog is already infected. Dogs and puppies that have just started heartworm prevention will also need to be tested frequently. In addition, it's important to test any dogs rescued from regions where heartworms are prevalent. Wow, great articles. So you have been listening to All About Pets, dailypaws.com on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or your smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Tammy Frazee saying goodbye from Owl Radio. Go out and make it a great day.